Now, I had toyed with the possibility of really making that last reading into involving our children. You know, like we have the last couple weeks, we've had a lot of fun acting out the gospel stories. Those of you who were a part of the last 2 weeks, would you agree? It was enjoyable. My first problem came was this is not as easy a story to act out. But the second thing is, you know, it starts out with these words, you know. There was a rich man who was, stand up, dressed in purple. Now, I know she has NYC on, but there is another purple that we kind of know as Baltimoreans, right? Yes. Okay. Add some problem there. But anyway, let me begin with the story. January of 2005, I think it was, a group of us went down to the Dominican Republic and visited with our sister church down there. Haven't heard too much from them recently, but at the tail end of that visit, we returned to the capital of Santo Domingo. And we had lots of Dominican food, and so it was somewhat of a comfort to eat in a place that wasn't Dominican. And so we went to a restaurant, and can you guess what American restaurant that is all over the world we ate at? Of course. And there in that restaurant, they do it a little bit differently there. You don't just wait at the counter. They bring the food out to you. And there was a waiting area. Do you remember it, Caitlin? Kind of in the back of the restaurant with tables. And there was like a concrete wall. And there were bars, iron bars that went up that sort of separated that area from the outside. And I remember sitting, because we were all out there, sitting as I ate on the bench with my back against that. And we were talking and eating, and all of a sudden, I felt a tap, tap, tap on my shoulder. And I turned around, and there was a boy. And he was going. What do you do? You know, I don't know about you. I'm not always good in those kinds of moments. I am thankful for our friend Christabel. Wasn't that his name? Who was a rather wealthy man, not really connected with the church there. What he did is he went around to each one of us and asked for a little bit of our meal. And gave it to this boy. Of course, what do you do with the people, the invisible people who are a part of your life, who come up to you here and there along the way, who stand on the corners or whatever? I mean, I grew up, one of my foundational stories that I tell about my learning about street smarts is when I was with my cousin Bob. You remember my cousin Bob? And we went to Toronto. They lived in Rochester, and we went to Toronto, and I was, you know, kind of young, and he was my older cousin, one of the boys that I always looked up to. And walking down the streets of Toronto, I had my hands in my pocket, and, you know, this guy comes up to us and asks, you know, can you spare some money or whatever? And my hands were already in my pocket, and I had some money, and I, you know, okay, what do you do? Okay, here. And that was an opportunity for my cousin to lecture me on what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do. And so that really is kind of a part of my upbringing. I always kind of go back to that moment when such times happen. But one of the lessons that may need to be unlearned is the lesson that I learned to avoid eye contact. You know, when someone's coming, if you give them eye contact, you know, that is like a permission, right? To come forward. And so you avoid doing that. You don't give them eye contact. But is that right? Is that what Jesus would ask of us to do? How do we respond? I can think of a number of wonderful persons in our life who have shared with me other ways of doing it, but perhaps you have some delightful stories or options that you can share with others of how to open your door in helpful ways to other people. Now, this story really that we just heard is a story about opening a door. It's the story of a rich man. I mean, that's the main character, is it not? A rich man. A rich man who was fairly well-to-do and had little problem. Of course, on the side, there was another character. Not much really is said about this other character other than his name. And his name was? Lazarus. Now, please don't confuse him with another Lazarus in the Bible. Anybody know, anybody heard of a Lazarus in the Bible elsewhere? Who is that? The brother of Martha and Mary. This is not the same Lazarus. Okay, it was a common name back then. Okay. Anyways, talking about the difference between the two, it's stark, night and day. But then the tables turned, as so often happens in the Bible. Jesus did that a lot. You notice in the stories he told? His stories, his parables often flipped everything on its edge. Life kind of does that, But also when it comes to, how things will be. And so there is another character in this story. Who was the third character? Anyone? What? Abraham. Okay, and Lazarus, who is in a very different place, crying out. And so here we have a story of turned tables. Now, what's very unusual about this particular story is that so often in these stories, the person who is on the edge usually is nameless. I mean, the persons that you encounter on the road or somebody who comes up to you, do you know their name? No. You know nothing, very little about them. And yet, in this story, who is the nameless person? Who is the nameless person? Anyone? The rich man. The rich man does not have a name. The main character, here's a story in which everybody has a name except for the main character. Do you think Jesus had a reason for that? I don't know. Now, I think that this story has a great deal to say to us about God's justice and how tables will turn, and about how those who are comfortable now will not be comfortable later. Those who are rich now, remember Jesus said something to the effect, the last will be first and the first shall be last. Jesus had a lot of things to say to rich people. Let me just rephrase. Maybe you could think of more on this list. Didn't Jesus talk about how, it's hard for those who have a lot to be able to get into the kingdom of God, into heaven? It's harder than even for a camel to get through an eye of a needle. Didn't Jesus say something to that effect? And maybe you remember that story, doesn't matter if you do or not, but that story of that person who was a very religious person, but who was also very rich, a rich young man who came up to Jesus, and he had a serious question. He came to Jesus, "What must I do to attain eternal life?" It wasn't just, "How do I get to heaven?" But, an eternal type of question. He was feeling unfulfilled in the here and now. And it was actually a good time for him. And he was asking this question, and Jesus first responded, "Well, you know what Moses said. You know the law and the prophets. What do they say? Well, you shall love the Lord your God and your neighbor as yourself. You know those things." And Jesus said, "You're right. But the guy still was struggling, and Jesus said, okay, one more thing. Take everything you got and give it away. I'm not sure he was meaning that to be a law, that that's how you will get to heaven, that that's how you will be happy, but certainly something was getting in the way of something for this fella. And it continued to get in the way. For he went away from Jesus, sad, unfulfilled, still questioning. Jesus, I think last week, didn't we say something about what Jesus had to say about you can't serve two masters. You know, that your money can come to control you. Mammon is what the Bible calls it. And you got to decide who is going to be in charge in life. Is it going to be all your wealth? Or is it going to be God and yourself being able to step in and say, no, you are not going to be in charge of me. Jesus actually had a lot more to say about these things than some of the other things we so often talk about. Like, sex. Jesus had a whole lot more to say about money than he did about sex. And so we have this story of the rich man. And as I read this story, I read it as a story about open doors. See, we live in a country where we sort of put people with wealth pretty far away from those who don't have wealth. I mean, we've got more well-to-do neighborhoods and neighborhoods that are not so well-to-do, maybe even down to ghettos or very poor sections of the city or even of the country. There are very poor sections around us, but they're kind of hidden and out of sight. And we're kind of unusual to that. Those of you who have traveled to other countries, now I've been to the Dominican Republic and Ecuador and Nigeria, and one thing I found is that in these places, the rich and poor tend to live closer together than they do here. Like I mentioned, that friend Cristobal, we went to his house, a very nice, nice house, and we went out on his deck and looked out onto poverty. It was existing side by side. We don't do that as much here. And in many third world countries, you have compounds which are separated by tall walls. And in some places, on the top of those walls is broken glass embedded in the concrete so that somebody trying to climb over that wall would get, cut and bruised on the way over. So it's a, way of keeping them out. And so I imagine that that's probably a little bit more like it was in Bible times. It talks about how Lazarus was outside this rich man's gate, just sitting. He was there. He was there, but he was invisible to the rich man. He was invisible to the rich man. So this is a story about perhaps the need, as we are opening our door to God, our need to recognize that we are also opening our door to other people. The poor, the hurting, the traumatized. And I'm here to tell you that is not easy to do. I'm not standing up here saying that, if you do that, everything will be honky-dory, because the truth is, it oftentimes opens us up to more and more problems we've got to deal with. But, this life that Jesus calls us into is not a life where everything is just honky-dory all the time, where we, everything is just right. I mean, too many people outside the church look inside the church and perceive that here are people who are perfect, people who have it all together. Well, in many cases, that's furthest from the truth, right? They look at the church and think, you know, I got to get my life together before I can even think about being part of this thing. When the truth is actually, this is a place where we're all kind of on a journey together with Jesus. We're following Jesus, and we don't always have it together, and we struggle as well, and we're kind of getting there step by step, day by day, moment by moment. And sometimes we are doing what we should, and sometimes we are not. Sometimes we lose it in relation to other people, and we need forgiveness, and sometimes we are selfish, and sometimes we are ornery, and sometimes we are very much characters who open our lives to other people as we open our lives to God. So, let me return to the question that was asked earlier. Who are the invisible people in your life? Perhaps in response to that question, I don't know if any of you wrote down something on your bulletin insert over that, but perhaps you struggled to write down something. Or perhaps on the other hand, maybe there was not enough space on the page or in your brain to contain all your thoughts. Regardless, let's take a few moments to quietly pray, each of us in our own way, over these persons. Now, it could be, if the space is mostly blank, that your prayer might involve asking God to help you become more aware of these persons. But then again, if you had a hard time limiting your list with person after person coming to mind, yours may be a different sort of prayer. Maybe something like, "These are your precious children, Lord, each with their own story and song. And I invite you to go on and express sadness or gratitude for them, whatever your spirit longs to express. But be aware as you do so that God is there ahead of you with them." This may influence what you pray for them. But one more thing. Be aware that you yourself might be on someone else's invisible people list. Let's enter into a minute or so of silence for our spirits and God's spirits to connect as we open the door.